This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here along with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and we have a special guest today as we are going to be talking about a lot of things, a lot of international players, a lot of things with international flavor. So we brought in a ringer in Jesse Sanchez. Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. I don't think I've ever been called a ringer in my life, but I'll take it today. Thank you.
Absolutely a ringer. All right. So a few things. First of all, a story that has kind of transcended baseball and even sports in general, and something that is prospect specific and something we talk about on the podcast, but the Marlins hiring of Kim Ang as the first woman to be hired as a Major League Baseball general manager. That story continues to reverberate. That happened last week. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Jesse's done a couple of features recently on some young international players. Yankees' Jason Dominguez and Dodgers outfield prospect Luis Rodriguez. So we wanted to have him on to talk about those a little bit. Winter ball is underway in the Dominican. And if you haven't seen it, one of the more exciting prospect duos down there. Guys, I think it'd be hard to come up with a more exciting duo if you pick two names out of the top 100 prospects list. Wander Franco and Julio Rodriguez, teammates down there. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll wrap up by answering some of your questions in the mailbag segment. But guys, first of all, the hiring of Kim Ang by the Marlins. Now, she turns 52 years old today, as a matter of fact. Happy birthday to Kim Ang. Has 30 plus years of experience in baseball, including 21 in front offices of the White Sox, Yankees, Dodgers. Obviously has ties to Derek Jeter from his Yankees days. And Jesse, why don't you lead us off here and talk about this a little bit? I know that this hiring has some significance to you, and you also have had several interactions with Kim over the years.
Right, Jason. So obviously this is one of those things that's bigger than baseball. You know, it's history. Kim, well-deserved, reached this position. And I think, you know, the entire baseball world, I think, you know, everybody's really celebrating this accomplishment. It's always great to see someone, you know, work their butt off and reach one of their goals. I think one of the things Kim said, and I think people that know her have said, even if she didn't ever get the job as a general manager, she wouldn't consider her career a failure. And I 100% agree with that. I mean, this is one of the most accomplished people in baseball. Very knowledgeable, as you mentioned. You know, why would we talk about Kim during a prospects podcast? Well, she's covered and worked in every segment of the game, you know, from youth sports to amateur prospects to international to, you know, the big leagues and everything in between. So this is a, you know, obviously a monumental event for baseball, for sports. And like I said, it's bigger than baseball. But when you think about baseball, Kim Ng is part, you know, of the fabric of the game, because really she can discuss any facet of baseball, pros, amateurs, minors. And I really think she's one of the most knowledgeable people out there. My most recent experience is when she worked as senior VP of baseball ops for MLB. She oversaw the international group. And what I saw there was an attempt to really understand what is happening on the international front. I think people can understand, you know, the international side can be tricky at times. So what I saw Kim come in do is just trying to get a feel for what was happening on the ground, listen to everybody. I think that's one thing the Marlins are gonna see, their front office, their scouts, you know, their coaches, are they're gonna experience someone who listens and takes their perspective and wants each person to, you know, contribute to the conversation. And she's a great listener. And then I think when she's done listening, and then that's when she offers her analysis, works together, a really collaborative effort. That's what I saw down there when, you know, in Santo Domingo, or, you know, different events across the Caribbean or Latin America. She was hands on. She was on the ground at these locations, really getting her input, you know, really listening to what others want to do, and really focusing on trying to do a great job. So, you know, obviously, even before I got to know her, I admired her from everything she accomplished. And then once you start to work with her in the same department, you know, in the same international field, part of baseball, you really just get a feel and understanding and respect from how she's doing it. And personally, you know, I've really learned that, how to do that from her, you know, how to listen to others, how to take everybody's input from everyone else and listen and understand everybody has a voice. And, you know, that's one thing that really stands out for me and Kim.
What's interesting, Jesse, just listening to you talk about her, and I've never met Kim, which is kind of amazing. I've never crossed paths with her, but the way you talk about her, including everybody and listening to all the voices and opinions to make good decisions. I mean, that sounds a lot like what people said about Theo Epstein when he became a GM, to be honest with you. I think that's one of Theo's greatest strengths. And, you know, with Kim having that in her skill set, I mean, that, you know, sets you up. I think that opens up the possibility for a lot of success as a general manager to, you know, trust the people you have working with you, rather than sometimes you see people think they have all the answers. And you know, being more inclusive leads to a more productive front office. You know, we've seen that time and again.
You know, I think, you know, one of the things that cannot be talked about enough is kind of what Jesse was alluding to when saying, you know, how this transcends baseball. And, you know, there are times where the game is kind of behind the, you know, the cultural or societal curve. And then there are times where it's ahead. And, you know, this should have happened a long time ago. But it was very exciting, I think, for any of us who work in baseball and care about the future of the sport to see it be a trendsetter in this way, even if it's late in coming. And the fact of the matter is that if you look at Kim Ng's resume, if she were a man, she would have been a general manager 15 years ago. And, you know, if not longer ago than that, if you look at some of the young people who have ascended into general manager's chairs, you know, but she's there now. And I'm excited just to have her be able to go out and be judged like anyone else. You know, it's exciting to note the moment in history and how she owns that part of it, and how, you know, younger women or girls now have a model of what that can look like and can aspire to that, not as a dream, but as something that actually can happen. And now she can go out and be measured like every other general manager, by wins and losses. And I'm excited to see what happens next. And I think that she's walking into a pretty good situation with an organization with an up arrow next to its name.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. We have a story up on the site now, Kim Ng talking about the next steps with the Marlins. And it struck me as you go through that story, some of the quotes in there. She said, "The first thing that needs to be done is I've got to really familiarize myself with all the ins and outs of the players on the 40-man roster, as well as in our minor league system." And she said, "I think the most important thing in this whole thing is to know the prospects that you have." And then there's a section on the state of the Marlins system. And Jonathan, as you said, an up arrow next to the Marlins. This is a team that I believe was it 8 consecutive losing seasons, you know, been something of a cellar dweller, and then kind of burst onto the scene this year, surprise appearance in the postseason. And Jim, wanted to have you talk a little bit about the state of the Marlins system, and also her connection with not just Derek Jeter, but I know Gary Denbo as well, going back to his time with the Yankees and now in a leadership role there with the Marlins as well.
Yeah, you know, the nice thing about this for Kim is, you know, a lot of times when a team changes general managers, they're not enjoying any success. You know, it's a rebuilding situation. You know, there's a lot of work to be done to get the team back to respectability. And with the Marlins, that's not the case. I mean, they made the playoffs. They swept the Cubs in the first round of the playoffs this year. And I know it wasn't a normal season, but they still did make the playoffs. They've got the youngest team and easily the best farm system in the National League East right now. We ranked them as the fifth best farm system at midseason. It's possible next year that I think it's their top 11 or 12 prospects, well, top 11 prospects in their system could all be in the big leagues next year. Nine of them were this year. The other two are their last two first-round picks who are very advanced, and outfielder J.J. Bleday and right-hander Max Meyer. So, I mean, this is a team that already has some interested, young, talented players on the roster, and they have one of the best farm systems in baseball, which they've really built up in the last couple of years through trades in the draft, and they're going to get younger and even better. You asked about Gary Denbo. You know, Gary is the vice president of player development and scouting, so he kind of, you know, he's not technically the scouting director. That's DJ Svilik, and he's not technically the farm director, but he oversees those departments. And he and Derek Jeter both know Kim well from her time with the Yankees. She was with the Yankees for, I think, about 4 years after she was with the White Sox for a while when she broke into baseball. And I just think that makes it easier too. I mean, these are people who have worked together in the past, and it's going to make it easier for them to work together in the future. So I think, I mean, as Jonathan said, I mean, this is a pretty good situation to walk into just from a talent standpoint. Also from a standpoint of, you know, you already have relationships with a lot of the, you know, higher ups in the organization. I think she's going to hit the ground running and really has a chance to have a lot of success there in Miami.
And Jonathan, you mentioned, you know, something that maybe should have happened a long time ago or has been a long time coming. And I know that I had shared this with you. I was looking, I stumbled upon something that was posted 20 years ago that referenced Kim as being the leading candidate to become the first female general manager in Major League Baseball. And it was incredible to me that was 20 years ago. People were talking like that.
Yeah. I mean, her name had come up, you know, when she was with the Yankees and she was, you know, taking on, you know, pivotal tasks there as an assistant to Brian Cashman. That was when her name first popped up. And I mean, I guess that site was right. It just took a lot longer than a lot of people anticipated. So, you know, I'm glad that glass ceiling has been shattered, and I hope it leads to more hirings and promotions, both of women, but also of minorities into important decision-making positions around baseball.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Jason Dominguez, the Martian.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
All right, welcome back to the Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and Jesse Sanchez. And guys, want to talk a little bit about one of the most exciting young international prospects to come along on the scene in quite some time. Already feels like we've been talking about this kid for a long time. He's only 17 years old. I was looking at the fact that we have his projected arrival date, his ETA in the big leagues is 2024. We're going to be talking about him for a long time before he even gets to the big leagues. Jason Dominguez, Jesse, you recently had a chance to talk to him. He has so much hype already. He's, even though he hasn't played a single professional game yet, even though there was no minor league season this year for him to play, he still managed to kind of go viral over the past few months. The fact that he's just bulking up and looking truly like not a human, like the Martian. But you had a chance to talk to him recently. Great feature up on the site right now. But tell us a little bit about Jason Dominguez.
So, Jason, one of the things I was really impressed with is it sounds so simple, but this kid just gets it. I mean, he understands the hype. He understands, you know, all the expectations that come with signing with the Yankees. He understands the expectations that comes with signing for $5 million. I mean, his life was basically changed overnight, at least, you know, from a financial standpoint. But what I was really impressed with is that he's not satisfied. In his mind, it sounds nuts to even think about it. He says things like, you know, I haven't done anything yet. You know, I haven't made it yet. Yes, I've signed a big bonus. Yes, you know, I've worked really hard to get to this point, but I'm at the very first step of my professional career. So the way I'm looking at it, and what Jason was saying, the way he's looking at it is there's still so much work to be done. So he's out there working every day. He's working 5 days a week. He's driving 2 hours each way to go work at a facility. You know, sometimes he stays there too late and he sleeps in the dorm room there at the facility with other teenagers who haven't even signed yet. So what you have, like, you have Jason Dominguez who signed for $5 million down the hallway from like 15-year-old kids who are also training to sign their first contract. And he sees them as peers. You know, he feels they haven't done anything yet. And at the same time, he said to himself, you know, I haven't done anything yet, so I still have tons of work to do. So he's really working on his fitness. He is, you know, trying to get stronger. You know, I talked to him. He's working on his core, his flexibility. I saw those videos. Those videos are amazing. He looks so big. And I asked him, you know, how much weight have you put on? He said, well, I signed at, I was around 190 when I signed. And over the past year, I probably weighed closer to 205 to 207. So I've put on a lot of muscle. He still maintains his flexibility. I just really enjoyed talking to the young man. I just really like how humble he was, but also how human he was. He's a 17-year-old kid, so he was wondering about baseball cards. And, you know, he saw on eBay or different online sites that people are buying his cars for hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars. And he's just amazed that people would do that. You know, he joked around saying, hey, maybe I should keep a couple of these in case this baseball thing doesn't work out. I can have a few of my own baseball cards and sell them off, you know. So in many ways, he's just a teenager. He's just a normal kid. He bought his first car. He joked around with his agent. He called the agent, you know, out of his house, and he said, hey, I need to come show you my my new sports car. I finally did it. I took the big plunge. I'm going to do this. So he goes, he told the agent to come out to the parking lot. He goes, I want you to see my Bugatti. And the agent's eyes got really big, like, oh my gosh, this teenager just spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on a sports car. And it was a used Honda Accord. So it kind of says, you know, who he is. I mean, he is a humble kid. He's working hard. That's his work vehicle. He uses that to go to and from, you know, work, to the neighborhood, through the neighborhood. I think he eventually purchased a used Jeep Cherokee so he can maneuver the difficult roads in the Dominican Republic. I just walked away feeling really impressed with, you know, obviously his tools are there and the projections there. And I think people have high hopes, but I think what's really going to help this young man is he has it there mentally. And he has really good makeup, and, you know, it seems like the sky's the limit for this young man.
You know, I have to say that I'm kind of relieved because I'm realizing I'm a lot like Jason Dominguez. I own a used Honda, and I also have put on weight since he signed.
that's the comp.
We'll start calling you the Martian.
Yes, I am the Jason Dominguez of MLB Pipeline.
Next time we're asked for a comp on Dominguez, and instead of the ones that Jim
Bo Jackson, Mickey Mantle, Mike Trout, Jonathan Mayo.
That's right. Which one of these is not like the other?
Speaking of those comps, though, Jim, I mean, the hype for this kid, you know, he was the best 16-year-old international prospect in that signing class, signed by the biggest team. And then he starts getting these comparisons. And I know you guys hate comps. But you report them as you hear them. I know every time we talk about this, people get on us saying like, oh, Pipeline saying that he's the next Mickey Mantle or he's the next Mike Trout. We're not saying that. You know, Jim's simply reporting what he has heard from people in the industry, which I think is what people want to know. But Jim, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually talk about that a lot, about how I feel like the hype around him is crazy. And then every time I write about him, I mean, how do you not mention that when you get those comparisons? The first time I ever heard of him, you know, and we don't do international stuff. Like for people who don't know, you know, Jesse does our international prospect stuff. And generally we'll hear about guys when they sign with teams, especially if it's a team we do a top 30 for. But like, I don't break these guys down when they're 14 or 15 years old or really conversant. And I had a guy who knew I did our Yankees top 30. He was with another team. And we were talking in the summer of 2018. And he said, hey, just out of nowhere, you know, Jason Dominguez is going to be your number, the best international guy I've ever seen. He's going to be your Yankees number one prospect when they sign him. And I was like, okay, you know, good to know. You know, he was, I guess, 15 years old at the time, Dominguez was. But it was true. Like, we didn't quite put him at number one right away when he signed that July, but he is number one now, even though he's yet to make his pro debut. And I mean, the tools are just like, it seems like you're making it up. I mean, if you wanted to be aggressive, and we try to be, I think, a little conservative with our tools grades, but if you wanted to go on the aggressive end, you could go 65s or better across the board on all his tools. You could play him anywhere you wanted to. I mean, there were scouts who, worked him out as a catcher. I mean, I think that would take away from his offense, obviously, but they just thought he had the agility and the arm strength and the hands. He could have made it as a catcher. He could probably play in the infield. He could play anywhere in the outfield. Oh, by the way, let's make him a switch hitter too. I when we were at the winter meetings last year, which again seems like it was a decade ago, the concept of being in a hotel for 4 or 5 days with thousands of people right now, I would go get breakfast every morning at the Starbucks that was right next to our hotel. And it just so happened, I think I ran into Brian Cashman like 3 times, just because he would go like early in the morning too. And he would deflect my Garrett Cole questions. They were on the verge of signing Garrett Cole. And I was just trying to make small talk with him. But we were talking about Dominguez, and he said he literally had trade inquiries for Dominguez as soon as they signed him, like on July 2 last year. And he'd never had that happen before. And, you know, I was asking him, like, you know, I hear all these great things about him. You know, it almost seems impossible to believe. And he's like, no, I mean, those are the reports we have on him. And, you talked at the open of the segment, Jason, about, you know, the 2024 ETA. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets on that Vlad Jr., Wander Franco path, although he didn't get a chance to play this year. But there was talk, I don't know if they would have done it, but the Yankees kind of were talking internally about maybe even sending him to low class A this year. So I think even though he lost a year, he's still going to move pretty quick. I cannot wait to see this guy play. You know, he was number one on my list of players I was looking forward to seeing play at some point in 2020. And I cannot wait. I have never heard a guy, you know, described in these terms, scouting terms, ever.
And it's crazy. I mean, as we've pointed out, he's yet to play an inning of professional baseball or had an at bat. Most of us haven't seen him play in any way, shape, or form, or even take batting practice. So it is exciting. You know, I have a tendency to want to be like, oh, come on. And Jim is the same way. I know this is, we are not two people who, you know, blow up guys needlessly. So when you hear those comps and they're reported, this isn't like just because one guy said them. I can assure you, Jim probably talked to, you know, 47 people before, you know, feeling comfortable putting that out. So it is kind of amazing. I do want to see him go out and play. I like hearing the side that Jesse was able to give us in terms of, you know, the makeup of Dominguez and how he handles himself and how he's carrying himself. And that gives me even more confidence that he is going to kind of hit the ground running and put in the work that's necessary to, you know, I don't know how you live up to that hype, but come close to living up to that hype, because we've all seen guys who are hyped, not this much, but, you know, the money or the attention, the acclaim, whatever it is, can change them. And then they don't end up sort of fulfilling their potential. But hearing what Jesse had to say about him personality wise is even more encouraging, that the makeup grade might be as high as the other grades that Jim was talking about.
Jim, you talked about him potentially jumping on that fast track a la Wander Franco and Vlad Jr. That made me think about the fact that Vlad Jr. was not the highest ranked prospect in his international signing class. Franco was. But if you look at Jason Dominguez and you think back to sort of the most ballyhooed international prospects when they were, you know, not even 16 years old before they had signed, I think you have Wander Franco was a clear number one in 2017.
Technically we had Ohtani ahead of him.
Right.
Well, I mean, because we kind of mixed
16-year-olds.
Yeah.
But going back before that, would you say that was Kevin Maitán the guy who got the most hype as a 15, soon to be 16-year-old signee?
I mean, from my perspective, it seems like he got a lot of play early on. I mean, Jesse would probably answer that question better than we can. And even like with Vlad Jr., I think he was behind. Like, I know he wasn't number one on our list, but I think he was behind. Like, there were a lot of Cuban defectors that year. I think Vlad was maybe the youngest, like the best 16-year-old. I can't remember. But, I mean, what do you think, Jesse? I mean, I know from – we kind of cover it from afar, and I remember Maitán getting a lot of hype before he even signed. But, I mean, have you heard of anybody who was hyped anywhere close as much as you know, Jason Dominguez?
I would say Eloy Jimenez might be one who was, you know, highly regarded just because of the all the abilities, you know, at the time. They really saw him as a athletic outfielder who could do everything, who could run and had the potential to, you know, not just play in the corner, but possibly in center field. Obviously, you know, he's grown a little bit differently than I think some people expected. But Eloy Jimenez comes to mind. Ultimately, these, you know, talking to these international scouts, you know, the goal or the dream is to get the next Miguel Cabrera, right? That's like the poster child for international prospects. Get the kid who is from outer space, like a Miguel Cabrera. And fittingly, you know, Jason Dominguez is nicknamed the Martian, you know, another guy who is just not normal. So I would say Miguel Cabrera, Eloy Jimenez, definitely Maitán got a lot of love. But Dominguez is a special character, and it's even tricky to compare him to, you know, young Vladdy, because even when Vladdy was 15 or 14 and 15, there were still some questions on what position he was going to play. You know, these scouts were all about projecting, you know, body type, body frame. How was that going to play as he got older? Was he going to be able to stay in the outfield? Was he going to move to third or, you know, move to first? And I think those are some of those questions that I think Vladdy's still answering these days. I was reading and I saw videos where he's lost, you know, 30 pounds, and he's really working hard to, you know, to fulfill his defensive potential as much as the offensive potential. But I think overall, the first person that comes to mind is Miguel Cabrera, then Eloy, then Dominguez. And, you know, these guys don't come around very often. International scouts, they want to get top talent, but ultimately they're also trying to get players to fill out their system. They're trying to get players who they can deal, who they can put in part of trades to acquire championship pieces. I mean, there's a lot of goals. There's a lot of things in play when you're signing international kids. You know, the ultimate goal is to get that big star, to get Jason Dominguez. And if you can get one of those, it's like, wow, it's a success. And this guy can really change, you know, turn around your international program for a long time. But there's a lot of success with, you know, signing, you know, mid to mid-range players who can also, you know, eventually be 40-man guys. And I guess the whole point is just to get back to the how special Dominguez is and, you know, his hype. It's not unprecedented, but it just doesn't come around like this very often.
I got a quick quiz. I looked back at 2015 really, really quick because, Jim, you were right, by the way, there were a bunch of Cuban defectors ahead of him. There was one non-Cuban defector who ended up ahead of Vlad Jr. on that 2015 list. Any guesses?
Well, I looked, oh. and we'll see if Jesse remember. Well, Jesse, do you remember who you had ahead of him?
No, I don't have that in front of me.
Yeah, it was Lucius Fox, and here's what I never understood about Lucius Fox. So when Lucius Fox was at American Heritage, everybody knew who he was, and he was viewed not as a consensus first-round pick. And then he goes to the Bahamas, and all of a sudden he's a $6 million player. That part of it never made any sense to me.
I don't mean to dig into the Lucius Fox story. I was just saying it was like that.
Well, we have Jesse on here now. I was just curious if Jesse had any perspective.
No. And originally, when the list first came out, judging by the story, you had Jalen Ortiz, who's now with the Phillies, one, and Vladdy, two. And then the order kind of shifted as the all the Cubans came in. Yadier Alvarez, Vladimir Gutierrez, Yusnel Diaz, Alfredo Rodriguez, and Eddie Martinez, all ahead of Vlad Jr. I mean, the thing is,
list is a really fascinating list to look at.
Look at who number 25 and 30 are.
Yeah, exactly. Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr.
Christian Pache is 14. I mean, it just goes to show the international talent that comes out and also how difficult it is to project 16-year-olds. Because I remember I did our White Sox farm. I still do our White Sox rankings. And they signed Tatis for $700,000, which is good money, but not eye-popping international money. And their farm system was not nearly as strong as it is now. And I asked about whether he should go on the list. And I was told, no, you don't need to put him on the list. You know, he's not quite that kind of guy. And then, unfortunately, they traded him for James Shields.
Maybe if you had put him on the list, they wouldn't have traded him.
No, well, I mean, I was looking to them because I didn't know anything about Fernando Tatis Jr. except who his dad was. And I'm looking at the end of my White Sox list. And, yeah, I think we could have maybe squeezed him on here. But, you know, live and learn. And then again, it's tough, though, when we're signing guys at 16 years old, you're projecting them so far in the future. And again, we don't have to get off on a Tatis sidetrack. But if you talk to the Padres, which I'm sure all three of us have done, they'll tell you that he took like a massive leap physically after they got him. And when they saw him in instructional league, after they got him in trade, everybody's like, whoa, like we might really have something here.
Right. Last thing Tatis thing, you're exactly right. I don't think anybody expected him to be this good. The first time I saw him, we were in Santo Domingo. It was like, I think it was an MLB showcase or an international prospect showcase. I was sitting next to his father. And, you know, first of all, I was asking his father if he has Twitter because there was this funny Twitter account with Fernando Tatis Sr. And he started denying. They said he doesn't have Twitter. Someone's using his name. Anyway, so we just started laughing about that, and we're watching his son. And yes, he's a 15-year-old kid, and you can see how tall he is, and you can see, you know, the potential there. But then afterwards, when I talked to scouts, they were saying, you know, he has arm potential. You know, he's not very fast, which is funny now to hear scouts say that, you know, to think that's what they thought of him. You know, his feet are kind of big. He's a little bit awkward runner. You know, he's taller than his father, his framework's there, but we're just not sure how it's going to play out. You know, so that was kind of the thoughts of Fernando Tatis back in those days. At the same time, he was 15 years old, you know, and obviously he's turned into this, you know, phenom and one of the, you know, the faces of the game, and, you know, good for him. It just says, like you guys mentioned, it's so hard to project these guys, because the reality is they turn 16 when they sign, but they're being scouted at 14. They're being, you know, scouted at 15. So it's actually younger than 16. So, you know, kudos to all the international scouts and the directors who have to go out there and figure out who these young men are and project them to be big leaguers 5 or 6 years in advance.
I always enjoy going back and looking at these international lists. If you go back to the 2013 list, Jesse, you mentioned Eloy Jimenez. He was the number one prospect on that list. Number three was Gleyber Torres. Number six was Rafael Devers. Obviously, three exceptional players there. But then if you go ahead to the 2014 list and you look at the top 10 prospects on that list, you have Dermis Garcia, Nelson Gomez, Adrian Rondon, Gilbert Lara, Juan de Leon. Stop me if you've ever heard of any of these players. And I know you guys probably have, but point being that no one from the top 10, I think, on this list has panned out to this point. I mean,
not 11 through 20 either.
Yeah.
Jesse, we want a refund on 2014.
Yeah. It does seem to kind of go in waves. 2013, great class. 14 was not. 2015, the one we were just looking at, obviously an incredible list with Vlad Jr. and Tatis and Soto. But I think if you skip ahead to 2016, that's another one that you had Luis Robert, who was a late addition. But I don't think that class is looking as impressive as the others, 2015 and 13. So it seems to kind of go in waves too.
Yeah, it definitely comes in waves. And that's one of the things these international guys will say, you know, this class is down, but in 2 years, those kids are going to be great. And I'm like, wow, we're talking about 14 or 15 year olds. How do you know they're going to be so great in 2 years? You know, but that's just kind of how the mindset they have and the world they kind of operate in. But you're 100% right about it comes in waves, and, you know, some classes are better than the others. And that's just kind of how it is. I don't know if that's how it is on the domestic scouting side, but it's definitely like that on the international side.
Yeah, I think it's similar draft. I mean, the drafts kind of ebb and flow. I mean, I think there's less projection involved, so you maybe have better, you know, you have better feel on, I don't know if sleepers is the right word, but like guys who, you know, you're not projecting. I think you have a better feel for the guys who aren't necessarily projected as superstars, but maybe as just contributors because there's less projection involved. But yeah, it's, I mean, there are years where, you know, I mean, I know, like Jonathan, what was the best decade draft of the 2010s? And when we knew it at the time.
You're asking me to use my institutional memory? Really?
I'm sorry. Well, 2011. I mean, everybody knew 2000, and the decade before that, 2005. We knew
is
right
the draft
away.
That always sticks out to me.
Yeah, the those drafts were the best drafts of the decade, and you knew it at the time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, but you know, you could certainly look back at, you know, rankings and how we did them, and you know, recognizing like, boy, we got that messed up. I mean, that you know certainly happens. You look at, you know, guys who get drafted late, you know, who end up becoming superstars, and guys drafted in the first round who end up not doing anything. So it certainly happens on that end, even if it's, you know, not quite the same leap in projection that needs to be made.
So that whole conversation began with us talking about Yankees 17-year-old phenom, Jason Dominguez. And now we want to switch gears, but just a little bit, and talk about another teen prospect, international teen prospect, this being 18-year-old Dodgers outfield prospect Luis Rodriguez, another player that, Jesse, you had a chance to speak to recently. And there's a feature up on the site now. And to me, I think one of the most interesting things in this story was just the confidence that he has. And here we're talking about another kid who has not played a professional game yet. But he's excited about the prospect of playing in the same outfield as Mookie Betts, which sounds kind of crazy for an 18-year-old who's never played a professional game, but Betts is there for eternity, the 12-year deal. And, you know, this kid's going to, you know, if things go as he expects them to, he could have a chance to play next to one of the most exciting players in the game.
Yeah, Jason, that is one of the first things that stood out to me as well. You know, I asked him how he's doing and, you know, what are you working on? We're kind of just having small talk, a little chit chat. And, you know, he brings up wanting to play with Mookie Betts in the future. And the first thing that comes to my mind is like, wow, this guy's 17, 18. Then I realized Mookie Betts is signed for 12 years. Like, yeah, it could probably happen. Like it could, this kid could look to his left. He's a center fielder. Who knows if he's going to stay in center. He could look around one day and be in the same outfield as Mookie Betts. And, you know, it was fun to talk about, but it was a kind of a serious goal for him. You know, one thing that really struck me talking to this young man is that he understands, and I think a lot of international prospects understand, that baseball is a business. You know, there you sign for a significant amount of money. You use that, you know, to kind of help out your family. You do what you have to do. You invest. You do what you got to do. And all of a sudden at 15 and 16 years old, you know, you're making these grown up adult decisions. And part of that realization is understanding that baseball is a business. So one thing that Luis really told me that really stood out, he goes, people think when you're a kid, you just see the fun part of baseball. You just see the fans. You just see, you know, the popcorn and the cheering and, you know, the nice uniforms. But there is so much that goes into it behind the scenes that people don't realize all the hard work that it takes just to even get signed, just to even want to play in the Dominican Summer League in the future. So he has that mindset. It's almost like a business-like type of mindset, which was really impressive from a young man that he has this level of maturity and understanding at 18. But it wasn't so surprising when you consider when these guys sign at 16, they understand it's a business. One image that really stands out to me covering these international showcases in the Dominican Republic is watching the kids pray or take a knee or hug their parents before they go out on the field in front of hundreds of scouts. They understand the magnitude of this showcase. They understand that their performance today can change their lives. So it's definitely fun in games. I think we all understand baseball is the best sport in the world, and it's so much fun. But these kids really understand at an early age that this can change our lives. So talking to Luis, he took that to another level. He was saying, hey, one day I want to play with Mookie Betts. And he wasn't being facetious and he wasn't being funny and he wasn't trying to make me laugh. He's like, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm just got to work to make it happen.
Now, Jesse, he's from Venezuela, but didn't he relocate to the Dominican? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, right. He is from Venezuela. He's from a state called Lara. What happens and what has been happening over the past several years because of the situation in Venezuela, you know, the political unrest, the socioeconomic place the country is in. I think we all understand how difficult it is for the Venezuelan people right now. So what happens with these young prospects, their trainers or their academies, they'll relocate to the Dominican Republic. And that makes it easier for them to be viewed by scouts. It makes it easier for scouts to, you know, communicate with them, to navigate the terrain and just the ins and outs of the Dominican Republic, because the reality is Venezuela is a difficult place to scout in. It's a difficult place to operate in. Most of the clubs have removed their academies from Venezuela. There are still some programs there, but the best bet is what Venezuelan trainers believe is to relocate their academies to the Dominican Republic. So that's what happened with Luis. His academy relocated to the DR, and that increased his chances of signing. More scouts were there. There was just more facilities, resources, and it made a huge difference. So, yes, he's from Venezuela, but he's been in the Dominican Republic. He relocated there, trained there. Now he's at the Dodgers Academy, and who knows what the next step is going to be. Maybe it's a Dominican Summer League, or maybe it's Arizona Rookie League. But his story is not an uncommon story for a lot of young Venezuelan prospects. You'll see them just move to the DR, or some have even moved to places like Aruba, or they'll relocate into the Bahamas just to get to a place where they have the resources, where they feel that it's safe, where they feel scouts can have a better chance of looking at them. Last thing on that theme is some of these showcases, they used to have tons of these team international showcases in Venezuela. Now those places, now those showcases, have moved. I've been to an international showcase in Colombia to see players from Venezuela, and that's not uncommon. That's just kind of where we are now. That's because of the state of the country, and Venezuela and baseball go hand in hand. It's still the most popular sport there. Despite all the hardships, the ups and downs that people face there, there's just still this passion for baseball, and, they're going to keep doing it.
And Jesse, from your story, it sounds like this was really a kind of group effort by the Dodgers, reading that their Venezuelan scouting coordinator initially spotted Rodriguez, and then seeing that, you say for the next several months, Dodgers area scout Lake Uribe logged 130 out of his 140 at-bats. You mentioned international scouting director Ismael Cruz and Luis Marquez. We talk a lot about the Dodgers player development system. I think this story does a good job of kind of revealing just what does go into signing a player like this.
Right. It's definitely a group effort. And, I'm glad I was able to, shed some light on what happens on the international side with the, area scouts, the cross checkers, the international directors, these supervisors. It's definitely a team effort. I'm sure it's the same way on the domestic side with, those types of scouts and the hierarchy and, the chain of command. But it's a big deal in the international side as well, because a lot of times you're covering several countries. The international director has to cover, and the assistants and the supervisors, they have to have their hands or be informed on players from Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, Central America, Asian countries. It's a pretty large task. And I think if you poll, all 30 clubs that are involved at international, there's a similar setup, because it's really important to get as many eyes on these young men. It's such a difficult task to project what they're going to be like, in the future, but you have a lot of people as part of the process. And most recently you see general managers and different parts of the front office also playing a role, because they understand how important the international acquisitions are. Either these guys are going to develop to play in your minor leagues or major leagues, or these are the guys you're going to put in part of a trade to acquire a championship piece.
Hey, Jim, talk to us a little bit about what you know about Rodriguez. He was number 4 on our international top 30 prospect list, and then he's, leapt right up to number 6 on a very, very good Dodgers top 30 prospects list, which I know, I don't know how much you really know about him at this point, considering he has not played a professional game yet. But I'm sure that by the fact that you have ranked him as highly as you have heard very good things about him.
I have not seen him play in person, but I have talked to a number of Dodgers officials about him. He's risen to number 6 on the list, in part because he's talented. They have had a lot of graduations. They were planning on bringing him to the Arizona League this year at 17. had there been a season. That obviously didn't happen, but they're very excited about him. He's advanced hitter for his age. He's got a chance to be solid across the board when all is said and done. He's got a chance to stick in center field. He could be a 2020 guy. He like I said, he's advanced at the plate. I don't think anybody questions whether he's going to hit. He's got a solid arm that would fit anywhere. Jesse spoke to his makeup. They're really excited about this kid. It was really 2 years in a row that they got the top Venezuelan player on our list. They got Diego Cartaya, a catcher, the year before, and then they came back and got Luis Rodriguez. So they've done a really nice job in Venezuela.
All right, let's continue talking about some international players and a couple that is getting the opportunity to play together right now in the Dominican Winter League. Guys, I think this is extremely exciting, especially considering the fact that there's been no minor league baseball for a year. But Wander Franco and Julio Rodriguez on the same team in the Dominican Winter League. Could you even pick two more exciting players that could even have the possibility of playing together down there?
Well, Jason Dominguez.
I was going to go with a word no, but yes, I think Jason Dominguez would be good at it. It is so much fun, as you said, Jay, I mean, especially because we didn't get to see them play. Presumably we would have seen one or maybe both of them at the Futures game. I know Wander Franco played already, but bring them back, and just to see them out there again is a lot of fun. We even have Julio Rodriguez lobbying for an uptick in his run grade, which I think is very much an enjoyable thing that we can see on social media. And by the way, I'm looking into it, and we're probably going to uptick his run grade. I think he's not wrong, but it's just, I think, we've managed this whole year doing what we do without the benefit of seeing players outside of those who get called up to the big leagues, or when we talk to people about what's going on, what's going on at alternate sites or during instructs. You forget how much fun it is to see these guys actually play. We spend so much time writing about them or talking about them, and the opportunities, even during a minor league season, you don't get to see them play that much, but maybe you get some video highlights and things like that. But to see them on a regular basis, especially those two, are they're so exciting and they're so dynamic that it has been very, very enjoyable. And they're just they're just getting going. And then you think about how much is going to benefit them to make up for lost development time at bats and reps and against a good level of competition. So I hope they're able to continue playing without any pandemic related issues, and that we get a good sample size of at bats and defensive reps for them, as well as the other prospects who are playing winter ball right now.
Yeah. Right off the bat, just a few games into the season, we're already seeing some highlights from both of these guys. Wander Franco made a nice barehanded play at shortstop, got a base hit. Julio Rodriguez got hit by a pitch in the backside, as I saw it described. Did not see the actual hit by pitch, and then stole a base, which is what led to his comment about his 45 run grade. I actually think he was replying to someone who brought that up, that he's not happy with his 45 run grade, and he confirmed. He was also hit by a pitch in the wrist, but then fortunately tweeted out that he's perfectly okay. So that's good to see. Some other prospects playing winter ball right now. Those are the two marquee names, but a couple other top 100 prospects: O'Neill Cruz of the Pirates and Jesus Sanchez of the Marlins. Some other guys who are in the top 10 of their team's top 30 prospects include Isaac Paredes, Anderson Tejada, Jeremy Pena, Lewin Diaz, Luis Barrera. So quite a few good prospects down in the Dominican.
And also Luis Hill with the Yankees is probably the best pitcher we've seen in winter ball so far. And he's kind of, he flies under the radar a little bit because he's, you know, kind of at the lower levels or middle of the Yankee system. But, you know, in terms of pure stuff, I mean, he's right there with Davy Cruz and Clark Schmidt and may even have better pure stuff, not quite as polished as those two guys, but he's probably the best pitcher that we've seen, you know, make an appearance in winter ball to this point.
It is the, it's the usual mix of, you know, good young prospects down there. And then some guys who are decidedly not young prospects anymore. I'd love to run through the list of names and the stats from the Dominican League and Dominican Winter League and see guys, the Peter O'Briens of the world, Melky Cabrera playing right now. The Brothers Bonifacio seems like, as always.
I love their acoustic album. yeah, there's always that guy is still playing category of players in winter ball.
All right. So let's continue on the theme of Wander Franco, because we got a couple of questions sent in to us that we'll answer here in the mailbag portion to wrap up. I'll put them both out there at the same time and you guys can tackle these. Do you believe the Rays will bring Wander Franco to the bigs on opening day, or do what the Jays did with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and make him wait a few weeks? That is from at Stevie D LS97.
And real quick to interject, Jason, sorry. He's got to ask our best questions, don't you think?
I was going
to
say, he's an inbox.
He's an inbox. He's an inbox more than he's not an inbox. So thank you to Steven for the consistently good questions. I just had to interrupt and throw that in there.
First ballot inbox Hall of Famer, for sure. The other question from Brian Stark, Rays fan, at Rays fan 1031. Do you see Wander Franco moving to third base since the Rays already have Adames at short? And low at second.
Jonathan, I'll let you tackle them first, and then I will chime in.
So I guess the first question about opening day, does he mean 2021? That was the first thing that I thought of. Listen, I'm all in on Wander Franco, just like Jim is. I think he's going to be incredibly good. He's played zero games above A-ball. I'm not saying that he's not talented enough to make a quick leap, but you know, Vladdy played double and triple A before he got called up. So I would pump the brakes just a little tiny bit. You know, he's 19, right? He'll be 20 in March. So I you know, I would give him the benefit of the doubt, not just for, you know, Super 2 status and control. I mean, that's part of it, but I think he needs, you know, some time. Now, if he gets a full allotment of games, you know, in winter ball now, and he's setting the world on fire, then maybe that accelerates that timetable. So that pushes off the need to figure out where he should play defensively. You know, he looks every bit of shortstop to me. You know, I know they can't have both of them playing short, but he's never played anywhere but shortstop. So I don't know, Jim. I mean, what he could outgrow it, I guess, just in terms of getting a little bigger and more physical, but he's already fairly physical for someone so young. You know, it's a good problem for the Rays to have, but I'm not sure, you know, what you do with a player that good who's only played one spot. I mean, that would be another reason to get him some more time in the minors to have him play some third base or some second base or, you know, whatever they want to do. I mean, third base would be, I think, the better option in terms of having a spot for him to play right away.
You know, getting to the first question first, Jonathan, I don't think he'll be in the opening roster. I agree with you in terms of timetable. You know, it is interesting to note he was on their postseason taxi squad. But even if he tears up winter ball, I think there's a 0.00% chance he's on the opening day roster just because of the free agent implications. You could keep him in the minors for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks and get an extra year before he's ready for free agency. And as talented as he is, I just don't think they'll push him unless he signed one of those long-term contracts before he got to the big leagues. Positionally, I think he's capable at shortstop, but Adames is such a good shortstop that, you know, I just think it's a case if they have a better option. I could still see him maybe taking over, you know, second base for Brandon Lau. I mean, Brandon Lau, he's okay at second. He's not, not, you know, I think he's an average defender at best, really, at second base. So I could see if you wanted, you know, to emphasize defense up the middle, maybe you put Franco at second. I mean, in all honesty, it probably just comes down to what the makeup of the team is when he's ready to take over, which may be at some point in the second half of the season. You know, if Yandy Diaz, you know, let's say backslides a little bit, then maybe he does play third. I mean, I think he's capable. You know, Kevin Kiermaier is a great defender, so I don't think he'll play center. But, you know, I've had guys tell me they think he could play center. I mean, the nice thing with Wander is one, I think he could play a lot of different places, and the bat's so good that it's going to profile anywhere. So it's more you kind of, you know, plug and play him wherever you really need him to when you deem that he's ready for the big leagues.
All right. Thanks to Steven and Brian for their questions. Thanks to Jesse Sanchez for joining us on this edition of the MLB Pipeline podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody, and look for the Pipeline podcast every week on MLB.com, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.